Theological education should be accessible. In the past, men have had to leave their local churches to train for the ministry. At Covenant Baptist Theological Seminary, you can now complete a seminary education while staying in your own church and being mentored by your own pastor. For more information on how you can receive informed scholarship with Pastoral Heart, check out our website, cbtseminary.org.
Second Timothy 3:16 says, "All scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be perfect, thoroughly furnished unto all good works." This is the Men of God Network, a podcast of Covenant Baptist Theological Seminary in Owensboro, Kentucky. This is the voice of the narrated Puritan. For more narrations, go to Puritan Audio Books. com. In history is taken from the history of the First Baptist Church of Boston, 1665 to 1899. Nathan Wood, published by the American Baptist Publication Society in the year 1899. In the autumn of 1740, George Whitfield landed at Newport and began to preach wherever opportunity offered. The great revival sprung up and spread to every part of New England. It was met by fierce opposition in many of the Orthodox churches. The two colleges, Harvard and Yale, by official action arrayed themselves against it. Dr. Charles Chauncey, the leading minister of Boston, wrote a volume in opposition. The legislature of Connecticut passed laws intended to shut Whitfield and all other itinerant evangelists out of the state of Massachusetts. Pamphlets flew thick and fast. Pulpits sought to ignore the movement, and ministers privately dissuaded their members from attending the meetings. But the fiercer the opposition, the more the flame of revival spread. It seemed to sweep everything before it. It was not a revival in the churches, but affected unchurched people. The climax was reached when Whitfield preached on Boston Common to 20,000 people. New England was mightily stirred not only by the revival, but also by the controversies which it evoked. It has been estimated that between 30 and 40,000 persons were converted within the 2 years of its ministry here. The term New Lights, given somewhat in derision, was applied to the movement. Many converts, not finding a welcome in the Orthodox churches, established new churches, some of which soon became Baptist. Unfortunately, the pastors of the Newport Church and of this church did not sympathize with the New Lights movement. Their opposition resulted in the failure of these churches to profit by the Great Revival. Few new members were added during these two notable years, and in general, there was a distinct decline in numbers and influence in this church. It soon became engrossed with the work of discipline, for many of its members refused to walk with the church or return to its fellowship. The preaching of Mr. Condy had much to do with this state of affairs. The members who sympathized with the New Lights revival found no encouragement nor even tolerance from their pastor. This led inevitably to the organization of a Second Baptist Church in Boston, with which the more aggressive and evangelistic members united, and the first church still further declined in numbers and in power. Mr. Condy was, however, abundant in labors in Boston and elsewhere. In March 1740, several brethren in Bellingham sent a letter requesting him, together with some of his brethren, to make them a visit and preach to them and administer the Lord's Supper. In April, he visited them, and two discourses were preached upon the Lord's Day in the public meeting house of the said town. He did not administer the supper, but referred the matter to his own church for further consideration. The Baptists in Bellingham had organized themselves into a church, but he did not find their condition sufficiently satisfactory to warrant his recognition of them. He went again September 1741 and baptized five persons, and again in April 1743 for the same purpose, and thereafter visited them occasionally. August 4, 1740, the Baptists in Springfield, Massachusetts, many of whom were members of this church, wrote requesting a separate church organization. They requested that the pastor and messengers might be sent to help them ordain the Reverend Mr. Edward Upham, whom we have unanimously made choice to be our pastor. They also invited to the Council the Baptist churches in Newport, Rehoboth, and New London. Springfield, October 14, 1740, at the house of Mr. Lamberton Cooper, the Church of Boston and the Church of Newport, under the pastoral care of Mr. John Callender, being met by their elders and messengers, and formed into a council of which Mr. John Callender was chosen moderator. After solemn prayer for the divine blessing on the important affair going to be transacted, the request of the brethren of the Baptist denomination resident in and about Springfield, Massachusetts, to the church in Boston, requesting their dismission for the aforesaid, was read, and an attested copy of the vote of the church in Boston requesting the dismission was produced. At 10 o'clock the next day, they met at the house of Ebenezer Leonard, and Mr. Condy, on behalf of the council, gave them the hand of fellowship. By request of the church, Mr. Callender gave the charge, and Mr. Maxwell from Newport offered prayer. At a church meeting November 12, 1742, the minister gave notice that he had a letter dated September 29, 1742, which was signed by James Bound, John Dabney, Thomas Boucher, John Proctor, and directed to him and the church. They declared that the pastor of the First Church of Boston, Mr. Condy, and the members of the church had departed from the original faith of the founders, and that the preaching had become so intermixed with Arminianism that it was like the high Arminian clergy. They demanded categorical answers as to the minister's views on eternal election, original sin, grace in conversion, justification by faith, the saints' perseverance, and declared that their godly ancestors, the first founders of said church, were strict Calvinists as to the points aforementioned, nor would they by any means, as we can prove, allow a free willer or Arminian, if they knew a person so to be, to join the church. Letter in the church archives. The church voted unanimously that this letter should not be read and that no action should be taken. The minister pocketed the letter and the church made strenuous efforts to win these brethren back to its fellowship. Messengers were sent to them, but all in vain. Sister Ruth Bound, when the messenger went to her, answered, "That text, come out from among them and be ye separate," had been much impressed upon her mind, and she would not return to the church. Brother John Proctor was admonished, but he was very stiff, and among other things which he said, asserted that they were all a parcel of Arminians. Mr. Proctor was a somewhat noted schoolmaster of the town, which may have had something to do with his being very stiff in his doctrinal assertiveness. They were all finally suspended from communion in 1743, and with others organized themselves, July 27, 1743, without the consent of this church, into an independent body. They met in the house of Mr. James Bound at the corner of Sheaf and Snowhill Streets, where they continued to worship about 3 years. Then they removed to the schoolhouse of Mr. Proctor near the corner of Tremont and Court Streets, and in March 1746 met in a new meeting house which they had built in Baldwin Place. It was now known as the Warren Avenue Baptist Church. For many years they called themselves the First Baptist Church of Boston because they claimed that the old church had so far departed from Baptist doctrine as held by the founders to have lost right to the name. This claim was never made good. It is evident now that this church had not essentially changed its faith. Its leading members remained staunch Baptists throughout Mr. Condy's ministry and loyally supported their pastor. It is doubtful if even he had changed as much as he was charged. He did not sympathize with the new lights, nor did John Callender of Newport, whose Baptist orthodoxy was never questioned. Beyond this, there is nothing to prove that the church did not hold the faith of the founders. The new church called Mr. Ephraim Bound, son of James Bound, to be their pastor, but found it difficult to obtain his ordination. Almost all of the older Baptist churches had been opposed to the New Lights movement and were prejudiced against a new church. I do not find that they applied to this church for assistance, but doubtless they would have had been refused if they had applied. Finally, with the aid of Elder Whiteman of Connecticut and Elder Green of Leicester, Mr. Bound was ordained September 1743 in Warwick. The new church grew rapidly in members and zeal, so that it numbered about 120 members in 1765, when its first pastor was taken from them by death, while the first church declined until it had not more than 60 members. February 17, 1750, Mr. Condy informed the church that he was unable to support his family, that the weekly contributions therefore had been lessening for some considerable time, and he was several hundred pounds in debt for his necessary support, and inasmuch as there was no great probability of his receiving sufficient from them and the congregation to pay the charges of his family, the church and congregation being small, the times being difficult, and the country brethren doing nothing towards the maintenance of the ministry, it was necessary for him to relinquish his place and endeavor in some other ways to procure a living. The church proposed to send word to all the country brethren and to see what could be done. 21 of them were notified, but only 5 came to the meeting. Nevertheless, a special subscription was made for the minister, and he consented to remain 1 year longer. He did remain 14 years longer, but the records are so scant that there are no means of knowing how he maintained his family. March 11th, 1759. This day the congregation began to sing without the psalms being read. Line by line, it being found most agreeable, though the church did not pass any vote respecting it. This is a great innovation, and doubtless might not have carried if it had been put to a vote. But the congregation, finding it most agreeable, never again went back to lining out the psalm. Fast Day, April 3rd, 1760. The church took up a collection of 143 pounds for the sufferers of the great fire in Boston of March 20th. It would appear that the pastor's unsatisfactory salary was not due to the poverty of the members, if they could make so large a contribution. In 1764, Mr. Condy resigned his office and lived in retirement in Boston until his death in 1768. He was buried in the common burying ground. Upon his retirement, a very tender and affectionate letter was presented to him by the church, expressing their undiminished regard for him. He had the warm attachment of his brethren. His ministry, however, had brought the church to a low state, although they were still left in it, some strong and noble laymen. The additions during his ministry of 26 years and covering the whole period of the great Whitfield revivals were 40 by baptism and 3 by letter. October 1, 1764, it was voted to sell 16 pews which had been abandoned by the owners, pay the Reverend Mr. Jeremiah Condy, on account of the long and great deficiency of his salary. The sum of £32 was realized and paid him. 50 years before, under the conditions of a similar ministry, the church had reached the lowest point since its organization, and God graciously raised up to be their pastor that eminent man, Reverend Elisha Callender. Again was the church favored with a pastor who had proved to be the most notable one whom it has had in all of its history. August 21, 1764, the church called Reverend Samuel Stillman to be its minister. He was born in Philadelphia in February of 1737 and was brought up in South Carolina. His education was largely by private instructors and was both thorough and liberal. He gave early promise of an unusual career. He was ordained in Charleston, South Carolina in 1759. He was received everywhere with great favor because of his unusual pulpit gifts. A change of climate becoming imperative because of some pulmonary difficulty, he came first to New Jersey and preached 2 years at Bordentown. He was then invited to become associate pastor with Mr. Ephraim Bound of the Second Baptist Church in Boston. In 1763, accepted the invitation. He continued in that relation about 1 year when he became the pastor of this church, and continued in that office more than 42 years until his death, March 12, 1807. The church voted to give him $10 a week as his salary to find him his firewood. In 1691, the salary of the minister of the first parish church was 40 shillings per week, 10 pounds of firewood per year, and the use of the ministry house. In 1726, the weekly salary had been increased to 4 pounds per week. The salary of Mr. Stillman was therefore respectable. Mr. Stillman had agreed to be associate pastor with Mr. Bound for 1 year, but it did not prove easy to arrange a satisfactory division of the pastoral duties. Some still clung to the old pastor, and a large number was greatly attracted to the eloquent young preacher. The church had very carefully provided that during his life Mr. Bound should be known as the senior pastor, and that he should share equally with his young associate in salary and emoluments. His honors, position, and support were so carefully guarded that those of his colleague seemed to have been somewhat overlooked. It was not easy for a man of so brilliant gifts as Mr. Stillman to remain in a position of irksome subordination to a man of the most ordinary talents and acquirements. Nor was it agreeable to the crowd of friends and admirers who quickly gathered around him. It was not wholly easy for the old pastor to have associated with him a man of so exceptional and attractive parts as preacher and pastor, and who had won the unbounded admiration of all. In truth, no minister of his generation was more generally admired in Boston than Mr. Stillman. He was a man of eloquence, of culture, and of courtly breeding, in all of which things the senior pastor was lacking. The year did not pass without some friction between the friends of the two pastors. When, therefore, at the end of his year, the First Church of Boston invited Mr. Stillman to become its pastor, he readily accepted, although not without vehement protest from the Second Church of Boston, which had hoped that he would ultimately become its sole pastor. Many members of the Second Baptist Church followed Mr. Stillman to his new charge and united with the First Church of Boston. Some of them obtained letters of dismission, and some of them did not. The breach between the two churches was greatly widened. They had never been reconciled to each other from the time of their separation. Their meeting houses were less than a block apart. The First Church was on the corner of Salem and Stillman Streets, and the second was in Baldwin Place, just off from Salem Street. Mr. Stillman was subjected to much unmerited criticism, and the unhappy feeling between the two societies ran high. There is nothing whatever to indicate that Mr. Stillman acted in any other than an honorable and a Christian manner. The Second Baptist Church of Boston saw with chagrin, when it was too late, that they had lost their brilliant junior pastor. The First Church, which so long had been in decline, entered at once on a career of great prosperity, which the fervid evangelistic gifts of the pastor greatly accelerated, while the Second Church has steadily declined. For some years they were unfortunate in their choice of pastors, and their history was disheartening. In 1772, they became somewhat softened in their feeling toward Mr. Stillman and voted that he might preach in our meeting house, but he did not avail himself of this somewhat reluctant permission. The fourth pastor of the Second Baptist Church of Boston was the Reverend Thomas Geyer, who had been baptized while a youth in the First Church by Mr. Stillman. When he was installed in April of 1788, the pastor of the First Church was among the officiating ministers, and from that time the breach was formally healed. The two churches have had only most loving relations in all the years since that day. In December 1764, arrangements were consummated for the installation of Mr. Stillman, and the precedent set at the installations of Mr. Callender and Mr. Condy were followed. The ministers of the Orthodox churches in Boston were invited to conduct the service. The following letter was sent to them. To the Church of Christ in Boston. Under the pastoral care of the Reverend Mr. Ebenezer Pemberton, the Church of Christ in Boston, under the care of the Reverend Mr. Condy, sendeth greeting. Reverend honored and beloved, whereas our worthy pastor, the Reverend Jeremiah Condy, who has served us for 26 years in the pastoral office, inclines to resign his care of us, which indeed we mention with affection and regret. We have, with his entire approbation, made choice of the Reverend Samuel Stillman to the pastoral office amongst us, to which he has consented. We have therefore agreed to appoint Wednesday, the 9th of January, if the Lord will, to be the time of his solemn and public installment to that sacred charge. We therefore now humbly ask the presence of your reverend elders and such other delegates as you shall think proper to send with them to join in council with the reverend elders and messengers of several other churches in carrying on the business of the day. It is a notable fact that Mr. Stillman was asked to preach a sermon at his own installation, and is proof of the enviable position which he had already won as an eloquent preacher. The great crowd at the meeting house shows that the long declining church, with its thin attendance, had once more become a center of popular interest. It will be observed that no outside Baptist minister was invited to sit in the council. It was doubtless due in part to the isolated position of the church because of Mr. Conde's views in regard to the New Lights movement. Mr. Stillman found himself at the beginning of his ministry confronted with several grave difficulties. The First and Second Churches, located but a few rods apart, held no fraternal relations. The First Church was also out of friendly relations with many other Baptist churches and was itself in a low state. He conducted himself with singular wisdom and consecration. His ministry was soon thronged with attendants. He preached the doctrines of grace after the manner of the early pastors of the church. Additions became numerous. His devout life and his courtly address gave him access to all classes of society. Fraternal relations were soon reestablished with all the Baptist churches of New England. Even the Second Church could not withstand his genial and Catholic spirit. No church could have given stronger evidence of assent and gratification than was given to the preaching of Mr. Stillman. There was no dissent from his strong Calvinistic doctrinal views. It is safe to infer that the church had not been led astray by the more lax views of the former pastor, but that he had upheld him because of their loyalty to a pastor and because of his many excellent personal qualities. There was the same steady loyalty toward Mr. Stillman, and during the 42.5 years of his pastorate, there was unbroken harmony. It was empowered to tax all pews, to collect monies, to settle disputes about pews, to repair the meeting house, and to meet the expenses of the church. Before this time, the minister had been supported by the weekly contributions, and this was supplemented by special subscriptions to meet deficiencies. The minister's salary had been very uncertain and his support precarious. The new system of a regularly paid salary and a definite financial support began with the beginning of Mr. Stillman's pastorate. It was found that the meeting house needed repairs to the amount of £533.10, and the work was done immediately. Previous to this time, all financial matters had been in the care of the deacons. Since that time, all the expenses for maintaining public worship have been in the care of a standing committee. May 15, 1765, the church sent its pastor and delegates to aid in the recognition of a Baptist church in Haverhill, Massachusetts. This body was gathered through the ministry of Reverend Hezekiah Smith. He had been an itinerant preacher and was in hearty sympathy with the New Lights movement. In the course of his preaching tours, he came to Haverhill, and finding a number of Baptists, he organized them into a church and became their pastor. At his settlement, his friends tried to secure the use of the First Parish Meeting House at such times as it might not be in use by the regular society, but the parish committee refused him and vigorously lectured the 22 petitioners, although some of them were leading citizens of the town, for having itching ears and heaping one Anabaptist preacher upon another, and for holding evening lectures which are oftentimes attended with a confused noise and indecent gestures, end quote. They refused a meeting house as a theater for enthusiasts and fanatics to all their wild and extravagant tricks in, end quote. This illustrates the attitude of the majority of the churches of the standing order toward Baptists at this period. Mr. Smith was a graduate of Princeton University in 1762 and took his M.A. degree there in 1765. He was a man of fine culture, of courtly manners, a notable gentleman, and of undoubted scholarship. He was tall and very impressive in personal appearance. He was one of the noblest Christian ministers of his generation. But all these things avail little in the face of the intense prejudice against dissent from the Congregationalist Church. He met with violent opposition. His life was often threatened and often assailed. He was stoned and mobbed and otherwise maltreated because he had the temerity to plant Baptist churches within the geographical bounds of the regular parish churches. His career is a romance of dangers and dauntless courage, of unwearied devotion and of singular usefulness. He was a man of commanding eloquence, of fervid piety, of unblemished life. He made Haverhill the center of his work, but constantly preached over a wide extent of territory. During the Revolutionary War, he was one of the most famous of the chaplains in George Washington's army. He was often in Boston and maintained a close friendship with Mr. Stillman until his death. At the recognition of Mr. Smith as pastor in November of 1766, Mr. Stillman, Mr. John Gano of New York, and Mr. Manning, president of the Rhode Island College, were the officiating ministers. In 1772, the Haverhill Church had grown to have the largest membership of any Baptist church in Massachusetts. November 28, 1766, voted that the overplus of the collection made after the communion service, after paying for the bread and wine, deposited in the hands of the church treasurer for the poor of the church. This is the first record of a regular offering for the poor, although there are constant mentions of assistance rendered to them. Such aid must have been thorough, private beneficence. It was found that there were 60 pounds which were under the preceding vote that could be divided among those in need. There had been also a few small bequests to the church for the same purpose. In November 1766, the deacons reported that Mrs. Condy, wife of the late pastor, explained her absence from church, that she did not like the doctrines that were preached by her minister, and that she should choose her own minister. Mrs. Condy evidently had her own mind as to which of the two ministers she liked better, and who shall blame her for loyalty to the former pastor and for her wifely devotion. The church, however, voted her answer not satisfactory, and evidently thought that admiration for her husband could not take the place of her covenant obligations to the church. In February 1764, the legislature of Rhode Island granted a charter to the Rhode Island College, now known as Brown University. This is a culmination of an effort made by various Baptists in Philadelphia, New Jersey, New York, and New England. It was established in Rhode Island because of the larger freedom of its laws, and because Baptists were somewhat numerous in the colony. Mr. James Manning, a graduate of Princeton in 1762, was invited to become the head of the new institution, and in the summer of 1764 began his work. Funds were scarce, and it was deemed best to have the presidency combined with the pastorate of a church. The college was located in Warren, and the president became pastor of the church in that town, but both offices scarcely sufficed to give him adequate support. Two pastors in Massachusetts were his most active coadjutors in forwarding this first educational work among Baptists in this continent. The Reverend Samuel Stillman and the Reverend Hezekiah Smith were indefatigable in their efforts to sustain the nascent school. Mr. Stillman's name appears as the second among the trustees named in the act of incorporation, and the next year he was elected a fellow, which office he held until his death. He was invariably present at the meetings of the corporation. He preached at every other commencement for many years, alternating in that service with Mr. Smith. In 1788, it conferred on him the degree of the Doctor of Divinity. When the agitation for the removal of the college to Providence, Rhode Island, came to its climax, he was one of the most influential of the men who favored its relocation. He was on the committee appointed to request the president to remove with the college. and to remain at his head. He was a close friend and advisor of the president. No words can adequately describe the value of the services of the three noble men in the interests of Christian education. They lifted the whole body of Baptists into a higher plane of influence and usefulness. They gave the initial impetus which has resulted in the wonderful extension of the denomination into every part of the United States. They were a triumvirate, singularly trained of the Lord for their great task, and they wrought together with unbroken harmony to the end. They were as fervidly evangelistic as they were earnestly educational in their sympathies, and this union was strangely powerful. They taught, they preached, they prayed, they planned for the extension of Christ's kingdom. Thank you for tuning in for a further history of the College of Rhode Island and President Manning. Please refer to our archives. This is the voice of the narrated Puritan, puritanaudiobooks.com.